Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 67 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's a great day in Indianapolis, the gaming capital of the world. It's the beginning of convention season. Mm-hmm. Lots of great gaming stuff coming up, and it's time for another great episode of Game On.
That's right. You can smell that convention season in the air.
Is that what that is?
Well, by Sunday of the convention, yeah. You know, you really smell it in the air. But conventions is what we're talking about. Conventions are what we are talking about today. John's going to give you his Origins recap, and then it's time for our annual hootenanny we like to call our Gen Con. What do we like to call it? Our Gen Con planning episode?
Primer, planner.
Planorama.
Get to know you, Gen Con.
The Gen Con episode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we got that, but we're also going to bring you a really awesome review of a new game, hot off the presses, from, Aiello?
Aiello, yeah. They're the publisher that did Biblios, and we're doing King of Tokyo. It was designed by Richard Garfield because, hey, you can't live off of magic residuals forever.
But you can try.
You might be able to. I don't know. It depends on how good of a cut he's getting.
But, hey, you ready for the rundown?
Let's do it.
Let's do that. Well, it's time for the rundown. The rundown!
Whoa, kicking it up an octave there.
I'm feeling good this episode, man. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about.
Sure, you're bouncing.
I know, I'm kind of bouncing here. But we're going to start off by talking about the gaming stuff we've been doing the last couple of weeks. And so we'll start with Cody. What have you been playing, buddy?
He just did a double point. I've never seen him like this.
I'm feeling good.
All right. The biggest thing that I've played, literally the biggest thing that I've played, is I got my second play of Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition in.
Oh, my.
Completed the game. I won.
Really?
That game is great. And not just because I won. But
are you in a capacity now where you could teach me this game cold?
I think cold, no, but with a book, yes.
Okay.
But I think I could teach you like in a three-player setting. Because my second game I played, it was a three-player game with my buddy Dare and the guy who runs the... It's like a meetup group if you go on meetup.com, and he runs basically a monthly Twilight Imperium game at his, it's like a real estate office, and it's actually really nice, big table, comfortable chairs.
Ooh, but some fondue. You
know? Yeah, that's right, fine wine.
There's a speed dating part of it, right?
I hope not. But it's really nice because it's the perfect way to learn, because when I learned, I want to say it was like a 6, maybe 7 player game. And it was just me and one other person who were new to the game. Everyone else was really experienced with it. So it was nice because, you know, they kind of took us under their wing and we played a full game, but, you know, I was learning as we were going and they were nice about it. And so that's the best way to learn it, with just a bunch of people who've played, because we tried to learn it once before with like 5 new people and one person who had maybe played it once, and it didn't end well. We didn't get through a turn, if I remember it.
No.
But that game, I mean, it combines everything, and once you get the rules down, it's one of a kind. So I'm going to be playing it again next month. And
how does it play with 3, with just 3?
Oh, it plays great.
Plays fine? Uh-huh. Okay. No loss of integrity of the game?
No. Some people may say that it devolves into a 2-on-1, and it kind of does, but the 2-on-1 in our game was changing. Like, one turn, it was two people against one other one, and then something would happen with events or action cards, and then it would be 2 other people against one other person, and it just kept changing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a close game, and you know, I think the big games are nice, but that 3-player game, we got it done in about 4 hours.
Wow. It's like a filler at this point, right?
Exactly, I mean,
not even
right.
Full game.
But I'm a big fan. I may pick it up eventually, just because the more I play, the more I read about, the more I like. So
nice.
Big fan of that. Another long game. Played Biblios. You know, that took like a whole half an hour. But
woo.
Still liking that one. I've played Small World a few times. Mm-hmm. I don't own any expansions or anything like that. But I forget how good a game that is. You know, it's just I play it and I'm like, you know, it's not my favorite game, but it's a solid game. And I wouldn't mind trying the new Underground expansion when that releases. But
oh, yeah. I may have something to say about that a little bit
later. Oh, it's a tease. Mm. Very nice. What else have I played? We had a few gaming experiences. The first one is our Game On Game Night, which this is all the local stuff we'll talk about. John and I went to the latest one of that, and I played Hex Hex XL, which I do like that game. That's one I really need to get around to picking up. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then we played a game of Quarriors, the new dice. It's basically a deck building game with dice. I forget what their tagline is, but it's like this.
It's some long thing, like hexahedral
combat
or something. Yeah.
And we had actually been exposed to Quarriors. We've had a few private game nights. I don't know what
that
to call
sounds
it.
Bad,
that's,
man.
Yeah, that's a, mm. We've
had some game nights.
Yeah, I don't want gamer after dark. But no, we played a few game nights with Jeremy D. Salinas, Dragon Strike. His videos are really good.
Yeah,
you can check him out at DragonStrikeVideos.com.
Cha-ching.
I know, we should get some money off of that. But we played Quarriors, which is, like I mentioned, this deck building game with dice. And that's my big, going into convention season when this new stuff is coming out, we love that game. I think we can both pretty unabashedly say we really like Quarriors.
Yep. I think we had a question on our Facebook page. We're going to talk about Gen Con later, but someone had the question, what's your top purchase? What's your big thing you're looking forward to at Gen Con? This is the game for both of us that I think we're both going to pick up. And it's like Dominion in that it's deck building, right? So much like anything, any collectible card game, you would say, well, it's like Magic. This is like Dominion because you still are purchasing dice, purchasing things that are going to go into a bag that you're going to, but then you're going to be rolling those dice. And the way they do different things is very cool. There's all these cool, they're etched dice. They're really nice dice. And they have symbols on them, but they're easy to understand. It's not like there's 50 symbols in the game and you got to memorize each one of them. It's very simple in the way that it's set forward. And the way that you get points in the game is very different and cool. So it's great. It's light and it's fun. I loved it.
Yeah, if you get a chance to try it out, definitely do so. It's one of those where it was nice because I had such a low expectation for it.
Yeah.
When it first was teased, I'm kind of like, they're trying it with dice now, but it's just another deck building thing. But I think this is going to be hot. I think it's going to be really popular.
Here's the part of it that I think makes it even better than the other deck building games. Because I was thinking about this, is that even games like Dominion and Thunderstone and Ascension, less so with Ascension because of the way the face-up cards come up, but definitely with Dominion and Thunderstone, if you have a perfect strategy, like if you really want to sit down and think about how to build decks in Dominion, you pick the right combination of cards and the right number of chapels and all that kind of stuff, you can have an optimal strategy and win that game almost all the time, and that's fine. A lot of people like that kind of game. The people who really like Magic like that part of the game. For me, the thing I don't like about Magic is that I'm terrible at deck building, but I still want to have a shot, and so the Quarriors is great because you do make decisions about which of these dice that do these special abilities you're going to buy. But then at the end of the day, when you pull those dice out of your bag, you still have to roll them. And they might roll the symbols that are optimal, but they might not. So that randomness makes it lighter because it limits the ability for your strategy to get played out. But I think it makes it a much better social game because, you're rolling your dice, you do your turn. You can still be talking and interacting with someone. You don't have to feel like you're really in heavy strategy mode. And the art's fun. Yeah, I could gush for a long time about this one. But if you're going to Gen Con or if you got this on your horizon, put it on your list for things to get.
Absolutely. Other games we played included Conquest of N'Rath. It's the newest D&D board game. It's a big, almost Risk or Axis and Allies type thing, big area control game. It was okay. I mean, it reminded me a lot of their other games in the fact that it's pretty simple to pick up. It's not a difficult game. I just felt it to be a little bland. Yeah. It has some good elements to it, and I think it will be successful. It's not a bad game, but I thought it was just almost overly simple, and it was just, it seemed like a dumbed down version of TI3 or Rune Wars, in my opinion.
And I kind of viewed it, being the glass half full person that I am, I viewed it rather than being a dumbed down version of that. I thought of it as being a cooler and better version of Risk,
mm-hmm.
because it does, or Axis and Allies, because it does have that same kind of element where, you know, you move your guys into a region and all these guys are going to battle, and so now you're going to roll dice. Well, you know, now they have, but each guy has a different polyhedral die that you're going to roll, and so it's still kind of a roll off mechanic, but I think it's more interesting in the way they have it done. And the added element that I think makes it a lot of fun is that at its core, this is a victory point game. That you're getting victory points for conquering territories. And if you conquer a territory, you get a victory point. You know, if your opponent conquers that territory back, and then you reconquer it, you'll get that same victory mm-hmm. point again. So you're getting those along the course of the game. But there's also all of these dungeons around the board. And so two of the characters that you can build are fighters and, was it wizards or something like that?
Fighters and wizards.
And as you build those in your little strongholds or castles and things, you can send those out to the dungeons to be doing these quests. And the quests have tokens on them. You turn them over. There are different kinds of monsters with certain dice on them that someone will roll as the opponent. And if you're able to defeat the monsters in the dungeon, then you can get a treasure card, which will have victory points. It could have also some really powerful standing effects in the game. So I liked it because with Risk, all you're doing is moving your guys, rolling off, you know, trying to pile up as many people as you can so that you have have this wave of people that are going to, you know, conquer your foe. This one, you want to do that too in Conquest of Nirath, but you can also do the quest as a way just sort of change things up a little bit and another way to get victory points.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll probably like it a little bit better than you did. It's got great components.
Yeah, wonderful components.
Yeah. So if you like that sort of game, the kind of the dudes on a map game, you know, conquest sort of thing, might be worth looking at.
Yeah, and kind of a side note about D&D, there's a lot of waves being made over at Wizards of the Coast. They had another round of layoffs in their D&D department. The most notable one was Bill Slavisek, who was, I don't know his official title, I think he's like the director of R&D for D&D. He was basically the top D&D guy. He came on in the 90s with TSR, and he helped launch 3rd and 4th edition, and he's gone now. There have been, the dirty words 5E have been floated out there, in the next year or two.
Really?
Oh yeah, I don't know. It's funny. Really? It's the RPG sales for 4E have not been not been what they want, but their board games have been doing really well. I don't know where that,
like Ravenloft and the Shard of War and those games. Okay.
and it's kind of, where do they go from here? They can't really go back to an earlier edition because that's Pathfinder, and Pathfinder's doing very well, kind of playing off that 3.5 thing. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next year or two. I mean, I've heard rumors that 5e could be announced as early as this Gen Con. I don't think we'll see that. I think that would be ridiculously early. But 2012 may not be out of the picture.
Because when did 4e come out?
07, I believe.
07, something like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
08?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. But interesting things on that side.
Yeah.
The only other thing, I would be remiss if we didn't say one other game we've played with Jeremy was Sid Meier's Civilization. And
that was a while ago. Yeah, we forgot to mention that last episode. Yeah,
he was giving me crap about it, so I got to mention it. He completely destroyed us. It made me running back to Through the Ages Arms and promising never to leave again.
Well, and one of the things I like about that game is that there's the different paths to victory.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really mean is that I like the fact that I don't have to choose a military path to victory, because I'm not good at that. I'm just very rarely good at any kind of military victory stuff because I just don't have that kind of mind, I guess.
Right.
Jeremy, on the other hand, does.
Yep.
And so while I was trying to build up my little culture points, he marched over and just, he absolutely decimated us. It was ridiculous,
So so be warned.
Yeah.
I think that's it for the rundown. What have you been doing?
All right. So I've been, I was at the same Game On Game Night with Cody and played Couriers with him. I also got to play a game of Ubongo.
Ooh.
Remember Ubongo?
I do. I'm very bad at Ubongo.
I brought that with me because I just hadn't played it in a long time. And I was like, oh, I could get some folks to play that. So played a 4-player game of that. And I think I saw that getting played later on in the game night. So I think that was a hit with some of the folks there. It's a simultaneous puzzle solving game. I think Z-Man produces it these days, but it's really a lot of fun there if you like puzzle solving games.
Now, Z-Man got bought, didn't it, in a little bit of gaming news?
Yeah, I heard that the manufacturer Philosophia has
very nice.
And that's kind of funny because, well, not that I really had a lot of conversation with him, but I saw Zev Schlesinger at Origins, and I was actually standing while he was having conversations with other people, and But it's just like, it wasn't like he ever gave off the vibe at Origins of, oh, by the way. So yeah. I think it was just announced right after Origins. So who knows? Maybe it was like a midnight smoky room conversation at Origins. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see what that ends up doing to the Z-Man model. So the other things that I played at the Game On Game Night, I sat down with Jeremy Salinas and we played a couple of rounds of the new game from Jeff and Brian Engelstein. From Z-Man Games, the Ares Project.
Ooh.
And this is a game that is sort of like a it's like a real-time strategy game in a board game form. So a game like StarCraft, you know, where you're building up your forces and you're diversifying what you're building, all that kind of stuff. And
Fog of War, you don't really know what the
other person's doing until it's time to battle. And then you reveal all your stuff and you produce all of your troops and everything, and then you battle. And so it's really got that feel to it. There's these big screens, and it's mainly a card game. There's a couple little board elements to it, but it's mainly cards. And you're, you know, building up your resources, and then when that battle card hits, then it's go time, and you're going to produce all your stuff. And there's a really nice dice resolution, a combat resolution system that I think works pretty well. It's a game that I think if you look at just like the box and maybe the components, it might look on the outside a little lighter than it actually is. I mean, this really is a game that I think rewards investment. You know, and I think that if just it's not something you're just going to be able to sit down and just pick up all of the intricacies of the strategy or all of the special moves that different cards can do, you're not probably going to pick that up on the first play. Thankfully, Jeff and Brian have written into the rules kind of a basic setup, which is a two-player game. The game will play up to four. But if you start off with the basic setup, it'll just introduce the basics of the cards, and then you can sort of build upon that. But any game that's like that, Vladislav Fadl's games are the best example of this. Things like Space Alert and Through the Ages,
Dungeon Lords.
Yeah. You know, is that, you know, you start off with that basic game, and then, you know, you can continue to invest in the game and learn the additional things that you can do. You know, so on first blush, I mean, it's got some really good mechanics to it. I guess I wasn't expecting it to be as complex as it is. Mm-hmm. So that kind of took me aback a little bit. I would need to get some more plays in to see if it's a game for me. But I think it is a solid design.
I'm hoping to play it before Gen Con. I'd like to get a game or two in.
I have to call Jeremy up again. Yep. he's our sugar daddy for games. But so anyway, that was a good one to play. Oh, the other thing regarding the Ares Project, I don't know if we mentioned this in the last episode, is that if you happen to get a copy of the Ares Project and check out the rule book. In the rule book, under one of the examples of play, Jeff was nice enough to have the two players that are in the examples of play be Cody and John.
There was, and I believe I'm the aggressor and winning in that example.
Yeah, so it wasn't perfect, but it was okay.
True to life.
It was pretty true to life. So Jeff, thanks so much for putting that in the rule book. Yeah. We were very honored.
Yeah, that was sweet. I liked it.
And we just discovered it too. He didn't tell us ahead of time. Uh-huh. So we're just flipping through the rule book and found it. So that meant a lot to us. So anyways, that's that one. I think that was all I played at the game on game night. As usual, Seven Wonders got played a lot. I always want to mention that because that game is getting played to death. I mean, I finally got my sleeves in from Myriad Games and put those on the game because that's, you know, those cards are getting beat
They'll
up.
They'll catch fire if you play with it unsleeved too.
I know, right? So other things that I've been doing, I played with Cody and Jeremy and Morgan, the Nirath and all those other games we just talked about. The other games that I played have mainly been at Origins. Oh, I want to mention, before we get to Origins, there was a couple other things. I've been playing a couple of games with my kids, and the one I want to mention is my son is 8, and 8 is a very important age, I think. There's so many games out there for adults that start with 8, that say that they're for ages 8 and up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's really just a ton out there. I think like Ticket to Ride is like 8 and up. And so I'm really sort of starting to test the waters out here and bring some games to the table to see, you know, what Ethan can handle and, you know, what he's interested in and what kind of his brain can process. And so he's been able to play a lot of we played a game of Small World, and so then he's able to play that real well. So I figured, you know, what better for a young boy who's interested in Star Wars but to get him into a collectible card game. And so I found at Origins a deck of this collectible card game from, you know, I guess it's back in the early 2000s called Young Jedi. And it's not the same as like the Star Wars CCG that is like the popular one that's been around for a bunch of years, but it's a much more simplified game. I think it is for younger players. So I got this for like $1. It was a two starter deck, two 30 card decks. And it's just a very basic battle game where you, you know, lay cards down on Naboo. It's the battle for Naboo. And you lay cards down and weapons and things like that. And then when it's time to battle, you pick up those cards that are on the planet and you order them in what's called your battle plan. So you might equip a Gungan with a blaster pistol or something.
And hopefully he turns it on himself.
Yeah. He wasn't too, he played that side too. Ethan wasn't too happy about being all the Gungans. But he's like, I wish there were more Jedi in here. So you put the cards in that order and then lay them down. And then you basically turn the cards over and reveal these. And you do these kind of one-on-one battles. And so it's all the things that go along in a collectible card game, like, you know, adding up your strength or your power in this case, and these basic, you know, 2+3+4, plus you got a plus one bonus here, all the stuff that's very typical in things like Magic and other games like this, it really does a good job of introducing that concept. And so we played through a little game of this, and I think he really enjoyed it, and he totally understood, and it was cool to see him understand these concepts of like, oh, I get a plus one because I'm on this location. And oh, my blaster pistol gives me, you have to draw a random card from the deck and the number that's on that will give you a bonus to your attack. And things that seem complicated to me, he totally picked up on.
So, now you're going to be buying booster boxes of Magic.
Well, I found out this Young Jedi game, I did look on eBay for it. And you can get booster boxes of it for pretty cheap, like $20 for a booster box.
Really?
So, I mean, it'd be worth it to me because he seemed to like this particular game to... You know, to kind of, you know,
send him on the Magic Pro Tour, make him pay for college.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit away from playing Magic, but so that was a lot of fun. So I think that's mainly it. So we want to go ahead and start talking about Origins.
Sure,
let's do it. So being gamers from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, we love Gen Con.
Absolutely.
But Gen Con is not the only show in the country.
No.
You know, it is one of the best.
I'd say the best.
The best that I've been to. Mm-hmm. But there are some other ones, especially around here in the Midwest, and one that I've gone to for the last, I want to say it's been like 5 years now.
I've been
at Origins, or the Origins Game Fair, which I could tell you a big long history of Origins, but...
That's boring.
Yeah, and I don't really know what it is. But it's been around for quite a long time and is a gaming convention that is very similar to Gen Con in as far as having a wide variety of tabletop games. You have board games, card games, tabletop miniatures, role-playing games, and then all of the various and sundry things that you would find at Gen Con, like, you know, people dressing up in costumes, and I think they do have LARPs, and they have you know, some other things like that. And one of the things that I really like about Origins, one of the main reasons why I go, is that it seems to have a nice focus on board gamers, on board gaming, and it seems to cater to board gamers. So one of the big things that's talked about on lots of podcasts and lots of media is the Boardroom, which is run by the Columbus Area Board Gaming Society. They bring their big truckload of games in their collection, and they provide them for checkout in this big room. And so that's one of the things that's really fun to do. In years past, there have been free games handed out and free food and giveaways and all that kind of stuff. And it's been a whiz-bang good time. And that was true again this year, but it's was a little bit different. Like the first time that I went and got a Boardroom ribbon, the Boardroom was upstairs in this sort of intimate little room.
It was nice.
Yeah. I mean, the walls are kind of dark. It was kind of almost kind of dimly lit a little bit, you know, like you can still see to play games. But, you know, it felt like you were kind of entering in the special club, you know, for board gamers. Last year, they moved the boardroom from there into a section of the main convention center that they've kind of cordoned off. And that became the Boardroom area. And so you still had to have your ribbon to get in there. And yeah, still had, you know, food and games. And it was still a lot of fun. This year, they expanded it a ton. And it is just an absolutely massive room. Just I can't even remember how many rows of tables they had. It must have been 20 or 30 rows of tables. Wow. And it was never full the entire time, you know. I mean, you always had, which is nice because it wasn't like crowded, but you just sort of felt like it was this just enormous this space.
Cavernous thing.
Yeah, just cavernous and just all the space. And, you know, they didn't have as much food this year, which I'm not really there for the food, but, you know, they threw out little buckets of candy bars and chips every once in a while. Hmm. And they still had the free games. You got one free game, which I think these were things provided by Rio Grande Games. And so I got like a copy of The Priests of Ra. Ooh. And I've never actually played Ra before, so I hear it's pretty good, and I'll have to check that one out. I'll tell you guys about that after I play it. But beyond that, the prizes, there wasn't as much in the way of prizes this year. But there was still the Cabs Library and still gamers there, and that's really what it was all about. So had a really good time with that. Got to play games with a whole lot of folks. As far as the convention itself, it seemed like attendance was down.
That's what I'm hearing.
And this is a convention that usually gets, I'm guessing, between 10 and 15,000 people. And it just really seemed like it never reached a critical mass this year. Like the boardroom obviously did not seem very full. And every room and venue that you went into for the thing, it just never seemed like anything was full.
And Origins never really, I've only been there, I think, 2 years. But Origins never really seemed full, even when it was at capacity. That was kind of the charm of it, was that it was like I always say, it was like people snuck in and held a convention. You know, yeah. it was nice. It's much more relaxed than Gen Con, which is one big plus I think it has over it. You know, we've mentioned that Gen Con always feels like you're missing something. You know, right. If you're in a room, you feel like, oh, there's these 10 other things going on. I should be doing them. Origins is very just laid back. You come in game and it's relaxed. But I've heard attendance is down and they're going to be moving the dates here for the next few years.
Yeah. And that was a topic of conversation among a lot of people of gamers that I talked to, was the fact that, you know, this convention is at the end of June and next year, and I think for the next 3 or 4 years, they've signed on to do it at the end of May, like around Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that is going to really mess things up for people who have children that are in school that were, you know, either that were planning on maybe bringing their kids, or, you know, or teachers, mm-hmm. who teach school, that this is putting them into an area now in a week that they're just not going to be able to come because of that. So.
Yeah, because especially out on the East Coast now, in Indiana, most schools are out by Memorial Day.
Yeah, here. My kids got out of school, I think, the 27th of May.
Yeah, and that's, in my experience, most schools are like that. But I know on the East Coast, you know, they'll go till mid-June almost.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Mid to late June.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but they're not starting school till after Labor Day. And
right. Like we always start like mid-August.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think my kid starts the school the week after Gen Con. Mm-hmm. So, either way, end of May is probably going to be a bad time for most families. So we'll see what happens. But there's a lot of people saying, hey, this is my last hurrah at Origins. I'm not going to be able to do it anymore. Wow. So
they may have really helped Gen Con out inadvertently.
They may have. And I mean, I heard lots of speculation as to why this was being done, that they wanted to draw in more retailers that were because it would be farther away from Gen Con.
And looking to do exclusive releases.
Because this was one of the main things that I noticed is that in the dealer hall, for one thing, there is a very severe lack of some of the big players in gaming. You know, there's no Wizards of the Coast, there's no Fantasy Flight. There's, you know, very small presence of, I guess Rio Grande had an okay presence. They had their
Mayfair's
own.
There.
Mayfair's was huge. Mm-hmm. Just like they are at Gen Con, they were running their little ribbon thing they do with all their demos. And, but a lot of the big players that you normally see at Gen Con just aren't there. They just choose not to come. And so therefore there wasn't any big releases of games from those companies, at Origins. And I just didn't find that there were any big releases of games in general. I mean, the biggest hotness that I saw was Asmodee released the Leaders expansion for Seven Wonders.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in very, very limited quantities. But that was about it. I mean, I just didn't see anything that was super exciting. You know, so the guys at Stronghold Games, they released Confusion, which didn't seem like a new game to me because we've had a chance to play it before. But that was kind of a cool new release from that company. But anyway, just walking around the dealer hall, it just never felt full, and that could be a good thing, because it's relaxed. You know, yeah. you don't feel like you're crowded or that, you know, there's not this kind of stressful feeling. You know, I did a paint and take miniature, and I didn't have to wait in line at all. I just, you know, here's your miniature, go sit down. Here's some paints. You know, so that was fun. But what it does to me is it gives me it's kind of a red flag, kind of a warning of, you know, what does this mean for this convention? And with the dates changing, I'm just concerned about it. So anyway, just to give you a real quick overview about the kind of stuff that I did while I was there, I only went from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. and got there on Friday afternoon. Immediately checked into the hotel and went down to the dealer hall, where one of the first places I wanted to check out was the Dice Tower booth. So mm-hmm. the Dice Tower podcast, Tom Vassell and company, were at this booth, and they were sharing some space with Stronghold Games and Clever Mojo Games, another company called Mirthworks. And their main goal there was to do a couple things. One, they were demoing games that were not being being demoed by other companies. So they were doing demos of Mansions of Madness and you know, from Fantasy Flight and some other games like that. And one of the big things they had at the booth that I had a chance to play was the new, brand new Small World Underground.
Well, there you go.
And as far as I know, I think that was the only copy of that game at the convention. And, you know, Tom had it under his arm personally most of the time. So this is a new version of Small World. It's a standalone game. It's an expansion, more or less, in that you can use the different races and abilities and things with the old game if you want to. You can totally mix and match those up, and it's fine. I think to a certain extent, yeah. Because there's some races that are specific to the terrain that's on the other board. But I think that you can do some mixing and matching. Yeah. And
kind of like Red Dragon Inn in a lot of ways. Like, you can buy Red Dragon Inn 2 as a standalone game, but you can mix it with Red Dragon Inn 1.
Yeah, and so I think this game works really well as a standalone game because of the theme to it. It's a lot more dark, I guess. It seems like more like it's dungeony than the Small World.
Because it has races like Drow and
it has Drow and spiders, will-o-wisps. That was one of them, and iron dwarves and things like that. So, and also the game board, at least for the 4-player game that I played, has a big river running through the middle of it, and so there's some different rules for how you cross the river and how you claim territory there. Another thing that's cool about the game is that it has sort of tokens that represent kind of wondrous places or special locations. And so when you first conquer that area, you turn over the token and see what it is. And then you'll get a bonus of some kind. And they're very different and specific. If you control that area, then you will get that benefit. And that's a neat idea. That was an easy thing to add on to the game, I think. So I really, really liked it. If you're a Small World fan, I would say it's worth getting. But if you're a Jones Theory adherent, then it's going to give you pause, I think, because it's just a second version of Small World. I mean, so you could, if you're Jones Theory compliant, you're going to have to make your choice of, you know, do you want the original game or do you want Underground? Because I'm not really sure.
You don't think they're different enough? I have to check it out. I don't know. From what I've seen, they look different enough, but
the gameplay is really almost exactly the same. Yeah. It's just some different ways of calculating out points and. You know, different. It's a little more interactive, I think.
You could cheat it by saying it's an expansion.
Oh, man. Okay.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I have to play it. I may hate it. But yeah.
I think you're going to like it. It's fun. So we'll definitely get a copy and check it out. So that was fun. So met all the guys from the Dice Tower. Tom was also drumming up some interest for his new foundation that was created in honor of his son who passed away, the Jack Vassell Foundation. And so, you know, he was handing out some stuff and some information about how you can get involved. That's going to be a great organization to help gamers in need. So
wonderful logo.
Yeah, Cody designed the logo for that one.
I mean, just beautiful.
Nice
just,
personal plug there, yes, buddy. So by that time, it was getting close to dinner time, and so I participated in the Dice Tower dinner.
Did we join the Dice Tower Network while you were away?
No,
I'm hearing that name a lot.
No, but I mean, you weren't there, and who am I going to hang out with but other podcasters? You
I
know?
Guess.
And I'm too. We were too lazy to make the Game On dinner, so there was no Game On dinner. So I crashed the Dice Tower dinner. I had a huge group of people there. Got to meet some listeners. It was a lot of fun. Got to hear some great stories from the chief from the Dice Tower, and had a good time. So the rest of the evening was just playing games in the boardroom. Taught Seven Wonders to a listener, Jonathan Moody, and his son Sam. And you know, that was, I didn't play a whole lot of new stuff on Friday night. I played a game called Irondale, which is from Small Box Publishing. This game actually comes in a VHS tape container.
Oh, nice!
Like it's like a small publisher. I bet you he got a really good deal on like a bazillion of those things. And so the whole game—it's a card game, and it's in this container.
It's clever.
So it was an interesting game. It's about you know, placing cards in a grid, you know, around a central location, and you're getting benefits from those, and you're trying to get points, all that kind of stuff. So what I did not like on that game was the graphic design, and I think you wouldn't have either, because the cards were like colors, but all the backgrounds on all the cards were yellow. And so you couldn't really, the little icon in the top left indicated what the color of the card was, but you, I mean, it was really hard to tell.
All you saw was yellow.
Yeah. So you're sitting there looking at the board saying, where are all the red cards? You know, it was really hard to kind of key in on that. So, but that was pretty decent, I guess. Played a little card game, small press card game called Knockdown Dragout, which is, as near as I could tell, it's like Bang, but with fists and feet instead of guns. So, you know, it's like a barroom brawl, and you're trying to injure your other players and then toss them out through the window onto the street. It was okay. It was too it was too long for what it was, because everything, all the different actions and attacks were on a die roll, which I did use one of our brand new Game On D6s.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. But it just sort of seemed like the game, we got down to like two players and we just wouldn't die. Like the last guy, we just kept getting back up and it just went on too long. But yeah, it was okay. So I spent a lot more time in the dealer hall on Saturday, just checking out new games. And I also went into the Rio Grande Games room, which they had a room upstairs where it sort of reminded me of what they had at Gen Con last year, in that it was just open tables with Rio Grande games there, and they had some representatives, demo folks to teach the games. And then, like, you know, Mr. Gravitas himself, Jay Tumbleson, as always, had food, he had drinks for everybody, and, you know, very nice environment for checking out.
You gotta love me some Jay Tumbleson.
I know. I
mean, the man exudes gravitas.
And so I just kind of wandered in there to check out some games, and also to talk with the listener and game designer Walter Hunt, who I talked to about his brand new game called Rails of New England. And we're going to be doing a review of that game in an upcoming episode. But it's a new rail game from Rio Grande Games, which I think should be pretty interesting. So talked to them a little bit about that, had a nice conversation, and then sat down to play the game Black Friday.
Oh.
So Black Friday is designed by Friedemann Fries of Power Grid fame.
What is its name in German? Does it continue the alliterative...
Yeah, I don't know what the word for black is in German. Maybe it's hopefully starts with F.
Yeah.
You know, Friday probably doesn't start with F, which is funny. But so, and this game is a little different from a lot of Friedemann Fries games in that it's very very abstract. It doesn't put on any airs about being anything other than a purely economic game. It's a game about the stock market. So the whole board itself, which is green. Shocker.
Yeah.
is a grid. It's like a grid of numbers that's just showing the different prices of things. And so on your turn, you're going to be either buying stock, selling stock, or using your money that you have to buy silver. And that's how you get victory points in the game, is you're eventually trying to, by buying and selling stocks, you get silver that you're going to convert. Sorry, you get money that you're going to convert into silver. And the amount of silver that you have is your victory points. But the way that it changes the prices in the game is very interesting based upon what's being bought and what's being sold. And so the mechanics of how you're laying things down and moving the prices are relatively simple, but I think mathematically what it's doing in the game is relatively complex, but it sort of keeps track of it all for you. So the board itself is not like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It goes up in very a non-specific increments. So you can tell that someone sat down, probably Friedemann Fries, and worked out some really tricky math to make it work. I liked the game. We played about a half of a game and then realized that we had completely screwed up one of the setup steps.
All right.
Like you're putting things in the in a bag at the beginning. We put the total wrong number of things in the bag. And then we got to a point where it's like, we have to pull 7 things out of the bag. There's only 5 things in the bag. And we asked all the demo people from Mayfair, and they're looking at us like, did you set the game up wrong? And then we found out that we did. The demo guy's laughing at us saying, yeah, you pretty much just ruined the entire game.
Nice.
Okay. So we decided to set it up again and play a full game because we were liking it, but we wanted to see how it played out, and it was fun. I'm not sure if you'd like it, Cody. I don't know. It's very abstract, and just, it sort of reminded me of Wealth of Nations. You remember that game?
Mm-hmm.
Where that game is very purely economic too, buying, selling, building stuff. You know, this was sort of the same way. But it helped me really to think about how price adjustment works and how the stock market works. It seems like for maybe a high school age group, it would be a good game for learning stock market principles. But it's not a preachy educational sort of a game. So I thought that one was pretty decent. So
and Black Friday in German is... Schwarzer Freitag. So Friday is Freitag? Freitag?
I don't know.
Yeah, but there's your F. So.
Okay. There's at least one F in there. That's then, right? Okay. Thanks, Friedemann. yeah, so that was a lot of fun in the Rio Grande game there. You know, I played, spent most of the afternoon in there, and so by the time I finished up, the dealer hall had already closed, and it was time for more evening gaming in the boardroom.
Now, were the, did they sell games in the Rio Grande demo area?
No.
That's what they should do. I think they're... That's kind of a thing they need to tap into.
I don't think they'd be allowed to do that.
They probably wouldn't, but I mean...
But I see how it would be a good idea.
Yeah, it'd be just kind of a thing where, you know, it's like, oh, you liked, you know, if you go to the Mayfair booth, it's like, oh, you enjoyed Pillars of the Earth. Well, you can get it here. Or instead of doing the ribbon, I'm going all like Dan here.
Yeah, you're like Myriad Dan.
That's right. Here's what you do. Instead of doing the ribbons, you know how if you get... You know, for Mayfair, if you get the ore and the sheep and all, they become a Knight of Catan, you get a game for some ridiculous
half
discount.
Off, yeah.
What you do instead is, you know, it's like, oh, you played Pillars of the Earth, and now that you're done with the demo, would you like to purchase it at, you know, $5 off or something? Is that not a great idea?
That's a okay
idea. That's a great idea.
It's not a great idea.
Thank you. It is a great idea.
Here's why it's not a great idea, is because people don't like pressure sales, you know, and so...
But they buy. They may not like the pressure sale, but it works.
It works at first. It'll work the first time. But if I go in there and I sit down to play Black Friday and I like the game, and then some Yahoo shows up with a Rio Grande shirt and says, with a shrink wrap copy, and says, "Would you like to purchase this for $5 off?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay, I guess." And I purchase it.
Boom.
Well, then they got their purchase, but I'm probably not going to come back to the Rio Grande room because I'll think that's irritating. Then I'll be worried that when I go in there that I'm going to get some kind of pressure sale.
Yeah, I guess I don't. I'm getting off the origin rail real quick, but I don't see it as, you know, like a used car salesman sort of thing now where it's just a pressure thing. Where it would be whoever demoed the game for you, and once the game is over, says, okay, you enjoyed Settlers of Catan. If you'd like, since you did the demo, you know, maybe they'd give you like a ticket or something or some sort of thing. It's like, okay, you know, for today only, you can get, make it like a day thing.
Okay,
you know,
well, I can see that because they did have a booth in the dealer hall. I think it was very small. But if it was you did the demo and they give you a $5 off coupon that you can then go in the dealer hall and buy the game.
Yeah, I didn't mean like table side service.
Yeah,
you know,
I thought it was going to be like, well, did you guys enjoy it? Would you like to purchase this today? What can I do to get you in this game today?
Yeah.
You know?
But if they did something to where you could buy the game in the demo room, if it was a separate demo room, I mean, there's probably regulations or whatever against that, but that wouldn't be a bad idea.
I could see that. Yeah.
Great idea.
Thank you. Well done. Why don't you give Jay a call there?
That's for sure.
So after that, it was time for more gaming goodness in the boardroom in the evening there. One thing that was interesting about Saturday night was that there was a state dinner at the Columbus Convention Center, and Vice President Joe Biden was at this dinner.
Really?
And so it was this, walking down the hallway, this bizarre mix of, it was more bizarre than when there's a Colts game at Gen Con.
Uh-huh.
And you got like all the guys dressed up like elves passing the guys in the football jerseys. You know,
right.
This was all the guys dressed up like elves passing these men and women in beautiful suits and, you know, evening gowns and that kind of stuff. And they even had like a metal detector security station set up and kind of cordoned off so that they could go into the other area of the convention center.
You think Joe Biden played any games?
I doubt.
Founding fathers or something?
That would have been great. But I didn't even know that that was what it was until the next day I heard on the news. But yeah, so Joe Biden. got back into the boardroom and spent a lot of time in the evening on Saturday with Jeff and Brian Engelstein and had a great time with them. I would say that I played Ares Project with them, but they looked like they were a little bit tired of teaching.
I can imagine,
that point,
yeah.
You know? And I asked them, I was like, man, do you get sick of your own game? They're like, oh, a little bit. But we did get to play some fun stuff. I played the game Barons, which is a new one from Cambridge Games. Interestingly enough, it's very similar to the game I just mentioned, Irondale, in that you're laying cards down into a grid and they do different things. You're trying to get points. I did not find this game to be fun at all.
Yeah.
It just seemed, it's got that Cambridge Games art, like Glory to Rome, you know, the primary colors.
If you can call it that.
Yeah, all the primary colors and everything, and not very good illustrations. But I just didn't find the game to have very interesting decisions in it. It just seemed like it was, you just sort of played it out, and eventually someone got enough stuff to win the game. You know, there was really not a lot of struggle involved. the cards were supposed to be kind of interactive where you could screw your neighbor and affect your opponent's baronies, but I just didn't find it to be very good. So that was kind of a thumbs down for me. After that, Jeff is kind of an old school gamer, and so he's got a lot of older games and a lot of stuff in his collection, and he wanted to bring out this game that was produced in like 1980 or 81 or something like that called Swashbuckler. This game comes in a record album case. Like, you know, like a full, like, oh, yeah. what a vinyl record album would
What's
come
a
in.
Record?
And what is that? and it even says on the back of the box, this is not a record album. Mm. Oh, it is a game only. And you open up, you know, it's kind of a, you open up the board that's the actual vinyl record container. And there's all these little cardboard chits and charts that come in the game. The game is basically about a tavern brawl between, like, Three Musketeers style fighters, right? Mm-hmm. So you have like Pierre and Andre and Charles and Henri, and and there are all these little chits, and you set up the tavern with things like rugs and tables with mugs of ale on them. You set up chandeliers, mm-hmm. and you set up big shelving units, and then you have on this sheet all of these different things that you can do on your turn.
Shelving units.
Well, like bookshelves. Yeah. little Allen wrenches. And you set your guys on the board, and you have all these different things that you can do. So maybe you want to move forward, or you want to step to the side, or you want to lunge with your sword, or you want to wave your hat. You can wave hat in this game.
Oh, very nice.
And you can swing from the chandelier, and you can pick up a mug and chuck it at somebody. And you can do all of these things, and it's programmed movement, much like kind of like Robo-Rally or something like that, or Space Alert. And so you put down what you're doing, and everybody puts down what their people are doing, and then you reveal what motions you're taking, and things happen in a certain order. And it can be kind of comical, too, because it's like, you know, Charles throws the mug at Pierre, but Pierre happened to step out of the way at the last minute, and now the mug hits Henri, who is standing behind him, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it all kind of plays out. There's dice, 2d6 dice resolution of all the combat and things like that. That's a little convoluted because it's a lot of chart reading. Feels very 1980s.
It's a very 80s thing there.
Yep. But the game was really fun. And I was skeptical too. When he set it up, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll play this old game, I guess. But yeah, my apologies to Jeff for thinking that, because it was a really fun game. It's one that really begs for a reprint, I think. Mm. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Stronghold Games. Take note.
Hey, there you go. Had a great time with that one. Also played a real quick game. I'm sorry, I'm talking a whole lot. Did a lot of Origins.
It's fine. Okay. You went. I didn't know.
All right. Well, I feel bad. Gen Con's approaching. played this little cheap-ass game called Lightspeed, mm-hmm. which involves, it's like a kind of a speed game where you're putting these cards down that represent spaceships. And the spaceships are firing lasers in certain directions, and they have shields in directions. And everybody lays all their cards out on the table, and then in the order of the ships, they're numbered 1 through 10, you resolve where the lasers went, and you see if you've destroyed other ships, and you collect the ships that you've destroyed, and then you add up all the points. Nice, quick little game. Takes about 10 to 15 minutes to play and resolve everything, but
I don't think Cheap Ass is still around, or at least in the version.
Not in the form that they were.
No, because they put out some really good stuff back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see them come back.
Yeah. Another couple of little games that I played, I ran into other podcasters like Stephen Conway from The Spiel and Mary Prasad, who does work with the Dice Tower. Some listeners to the show, like Justin and Ashley Moore, always good to see them. And we played. They were playing this game called Climb, mm-hmm. which is a best way I can describe it is it's like it's sort of a combination of Twister and Operation with your fingers.
Okay.
And so it's a little card game, and they have these cards that you set up in sort of a zigzag pattern, like you're climbing up a mountain. And each of the cards has a series of holes in it. And it might like have a triangle-shaped hole or a rectangle-shaped hole or a circle. And then that circle will be or that shape will be a particular color. And the colors in the game represent what finger you use. Mm. So like all of the black ones will be your thumb, and all of the red ones will be your ring finger and that kind of stuff. And so there's a card that represents like kind of your base camp, and then a card that represents the top of the mountain. And so you start off with one of your fingers, whichever one you want, on the base camp. And then you have to move and put your finger inside the hole, the correct finger, of the next card. And then you basically have to climb your fingers up using the right fingers in the right holes to get up the mountain. And then there's also points awarded based upon how many fingers you have down at any one time. And so it's this sort of contortionist thing with your fingers of trying to get, you know, it's like, oh, my finger doesn't bend that way, and to try to get up this mountain. And so it was cute. It's rare that you see something that you haven't seen before, and that was pretty neat. Continued in the boardroom, they handed out the prizes for the and the way they handed out the prizes were it was kind of strange. They've had drawings in the past where they handed out tickets. This time, what they did is that they basically had you sit down at a table, whatever table you were at, and then they brought the games down the row of tables, and whoever was bringing the game down had been given a certain table number to stop at, mm-hmm. and then they handed the game out. Oh. And so, yeah, I didn't win anything, but it was fine. Yeah. you know, later on, we played another game of Seven Wonders, and anyway, it was just a really great time. Played some games of King of Tokyo, which we're going to be talking about later on in our review, so I'll hold off talking about that. And that was Saturday. Stayed up super late on Saturday, yeah. like 3 o'clock. It was very, very late. Geez. Yeah. And then woke up the next morning. Fortunately, I had a late checkout of my hotel, so I didn't have to check out till 2. So I was able to go down and, again, a little bit more dealer hall, although at that point I'd really seen all that I wanted to see. So what I decided to do on Sunday was the Mayfair get the ribbons thing, you know, where you play
making demos. The rounds.
Yeah, you play demos of different games. And so I played things like the new Struggle for Catan, which is a multiplayer card game with the Catan theme. I'll hold off talking about that one because I think that's one in a future episode we may do a review on, but that one was very interesting. Played Steam for the first time.
Yeah?
Yeah, which I liked a lot. It's a train game, Martin Wallace, kind of one of the archetypal train games that's out there right now. I thought that one was very solid. And at Mayfair, one of the main things that I tried that was cool, that was new, was they had a prototype of the new Discworld board game. I think it's called
Ankh-Morpork.
Ankh-Morpork, yeah. I've never read any of the Discworld books, but I was given a recommendation by the other people playing the game to start with the book Guards. That's a good one to start with. So
I'm not big on like the cheeky fantasy stuff, so I don't know if I may read one, but
I got to read one because I hear they're really funny. I hear they're good. So that game I think was good. It's another Martin Wallace game actually. Yeah. But I didn't know any of the stuff like on the cards. It didn't make any sense to me. So I think it'd be fine, but I think it'll be one of those much richer experiences if you know the characters. Well,
it's kind of like it's kind of like when I played the Game of Thrones LCG way, way back when.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything, and I'm like, well, it's a fine game, but I don't really get it. And now that I've read the books, I want to go back and play that. You know?
I almost picked up, I saw a copy of it relatively cheap. I almost got it because we do need to try that one again. Yeah. Because, now that you know all the characters and everything. So that was the main thing I did on Sunday, and then it was time to sort of check out. They had a big final drawing of free games at the Tom Vassell Dice Tower booth, and so I stood there for a long time listening to poor Bart, the chief there. Every time the name would be called, he was like a siren on the top of a police car. He'd have to go, you know, Bob Jones, Bob Jones. Bob Jones, because it was just so many people there. There was probably 100 people crowded around the booth. I didn't win anything there either.
Oh.
Thanks, Tom. and then it was just time to come home. So I had a really good time. I know I started off the talk here saying that I was worried about Origins. That didn't change the fact that I had a really great time. Played a lot of good games, and the best part of the whole thing was getting to meet a lot of you listeners out there. I had a lot of folks come up to me, just very gracious and a lot of great comments and everything. I really do appreciate that. It is the best thing about being a podcaster is being able to meet new people and play games and build relationships like that. So that was a lot of fun. So hopefully...
You're going to go back next year?
No.
Oh, wow. That was quick.
No.
Are you done with Origins? Or?
I think so. And it wasn't because of any bad experience that I had, but... it's just a personal thing. I'm trying to kind of reel in the amount of time and money I'm spending on gaming. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously an important thing in my life because I'm doing this podcast for the last three years, but I just sort of feel like I tend to go to conventions. I spend a little bit too much money. Mm-hmm. I'm spending time away from my family. It would have been different if Rachel and the kids could have come with me, but they weren't able to this year. So I just need to kind of limit what I'm doing. Gen Con is the big show and it's right here in town. So it's just a no-brainer for me to be able to spend that time. But
how do you see the future of Origins? I mean, Yeah, you know, cuz there's been with this date change, a lot of people say Tense is going to go way down. I know Looney Labs, you know, Origins is their big con. They usually don't even really have an official presence at Gen Con.
Yeah.
They've already said they're not coming next year. I mean,
that's big. They took up a huge hall with their big experiment area. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure like Mayfair will still be there, and maybe the date change will draw in some other vendors, but I just don't know. I feel like the leadership in Gamma that puts on Origins, they had to know this. I mean,
yeah.
There had to have been someone that said, you know, that this date's going to knock out all the teachers and all the people with small kids, you know, but they still did it anyway. So I don't know if there's some kind of thing we don't know about that Gamma's getting some money from somebody. I'm not saying like underhanded dealings, but just there's some deal that's going to make this worthwhile for them, you know? So
I think it might not be around in 5 years.
I don't know.
It's possible.
It'll be at a hotel or something, you know?
Yeah.
I think for me, it's probably my last Origins. You know, definitely be, of course, going to Gen Con every year. Had a great time. Yeah. Like I said, if you listeners, hopefully you got to found me and got yourself a Game On die, because I handed out quite a number of Game On dice there. But it was a great time. So that's my report on Origins 2011.
Well, we had a nice report on Origins, but now the moment you've been waiting for, the moment I've been waiting for, is our Gen Con planning episode, where we're going to tell you the ins and outs of Gen Con and how you can best prepare for it. Now, I think the listeners have kind of saw this coming, because starting about a month ago, we started getting a lot of emails in the inbox about asking about Gen Con, you know, questions here. And if you've been waiting, we apologize, but we wanted to gather them all up for this episode, and for the first time, we put out a call on Twitter and Facebook on the Game On podcast, and you basically asking for questions today on what you want to know about the show.
Not necessarily today, meaning when you're listening to this, but today as we're recording.
Yes, today as we're recording, right. Yeah, I figured they'd figure that out.
I'm just being a jerk.
All right, we'll start with some of the tweets and Facebook messages we got. As always, these are real tweets from real people. The first one we got,
I'm glad you make that,
that's kind of
distinction.
That's kind of a Bill Simmons thing. If you read ESPN,
Okay.
He goes, as always, these are real emails from real people.
Okay, cool.
We have a tweet here that says, I might bring my 13-year-old son. What is there for him? He is not a big board gamer, but likes console games. Well, well, well.
Well, indeed.
He will like the video game hall. In past years, this has been multiple large rooms where... let's see, last year it was pretty cool because they had one room that was more like the console room, and walking through there was like walking through a museum, because they had everything from like old Atari 2600s to GameCubes to Super Nintendos to Atari Jaguars. I mean, some of these consoles were, you know, they had Dreamcasts in there. I had a Dreamcast back in the day. It was cool.
Yeah.
But
that was my bachelor party. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
That was we went and played... I forget what we did, but we went and did something out, and then when we came back, it was a surprise. My friends had all brought over TVs to my buddy's house, and we had like 8 or 9 TVs with every possible console, and then my buddy had his 65-inch giant high-def TV with the Atari 2600 hooked up to it.
Oh, jeez.
It was... Anyway, sorry, I digress.
But so one of those rooms had all sorts of that. Just game systems out the wazoo. You could play about any game imaginable, and it, usually just for a few generic tickets. And then the other room they had, it had more of the party style games. So you saw a lot of, Rock Band and things like that. There's LAN areas set up for people playing Counter-Strike and games like that. So I think your son's going to have a lot to do there. I mean, because if he likes console games, then there are a ton of those there. And it's a nice setup, because then maybe you can sneak in a board game or two. Because you're at Gen Con.
Yeah, and I would almost say that, I mean, definitely don't go into Gen Con thinking that it's a video game convention, because...
No.
But, you know, there's stuff definitely for him to do, but I would almost say this is a perfect opportunity to introduce him to some different kinds of games. Mm. That there's the collectible card games and board games and role-playing games, that kind of stuff. yeah, might be, you know, just going in the dealer hall, I think you'll start to see things like, oh, I never knew this kind of thing existed. So
right.
I think he will not be bored.
No. And I mentioned generic tickets there. I'm going to go into that a little bit. We had an email or two ask about how many generic tickets should I get? Because we've recommended that in the past. Get some generics. The good rule of thumb, if I remember right, correct me if I'm wrong, a generic ticket is roughly worth about 2 hours.
Yes, it's worth 2 hours.
Okay. So you can kind of judge it there. How much of your schedule are you leaving open for just pickup games or looking through the catalog saying, that looks fun, I'm going to go try it.
Right.
I would say 4 is a pretty good number. Don't be afraid. I wouldn't get, you could get less than 4. I would say 4 is a good solid number. Not
a good start.
Yeah, good start. You can get more. You can buy more on site, which is nice. And usually to buy generics, that's not a really long line.
No, and really, you know, we'll talk about registration in a second. And but once the big push of registration is over with, afternoon and evening times, mm-hmm. it's usually pretty, especially in the evening, you can, you know, walk up and get generics mm-hmm. with no problem.
Yeah, and the nice thing about generics is if you don't use them, you can return them and get a refund to your account. So you can use them to buy badges for next year or, you know, just generics the next year. I believe there is a small fee that they take out for it, but yeah. It's better than, you know, you don't have to worry about buying 8 tickets and then I didn't use 4 of them. I'm out that money. No, you can put it towards next year.
Right.
So not too bad. All right. Another tweet we got was Gen Con on a budget. That's all it said.
That was it. Okay.
All right. So Gen Con on a budget. How you can save money. I think one of the big things is you can pack your own lunch, snack, drink thing because, you know, you don't want to be buying food and drinks in the convention center at ICC prices.
Right.
It's going to be crazy expensive. And, you know, a lot of people just, you know, it's like pack a sandwich for lunch. You know, if you don't want to, there's plenty of options around there. You can go to the mall food court for a lot of the fast food options or there's sit-down restaurants, but
yeah, there's cheap, you know, $5 to $10 eats, mm-hmm. for, you know, if you want to do it that route. But if you want to go even cheaper, then that's a great idea. Just pack up a lunch, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of hotels, I'm not sure which hotels, but a lot of them have little refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if yours will, but, you know, but if you have that, then you can just go down to, I want to say that probably nearby there's got to be like a CVS or some kind of a place where you could get like a loaf of bread or something, you know, and, you know, just be able to just stock up, have a little kitchenette there.
Yeah. I mean, you can really stretch your dollar there. I mean, you can bring a water bottle and fill it up at water fountains there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as long as you're not buying a lot of things in the dealer hall, a lot of the expense of Gen Con is front loaded in getting your badge, getting your hotel. If you're staying in a hotel, the day-to-day expense, I really think, is just food and anything else you get.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And if you're playing a lot of long games, I find that I sometimes eat less at Gen Con than I do just in my normal day because I'll skip. I'm not saying to skip a meal, but you might skip a meal if you're playing a game from 10 to 2, you know,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you'll only eat a light lunch or something. So
yeah, man, don't buy any True Dungeon tickets. That'll help on your...
that always helps with the budget.
Gen Con in a budget. We have another one here. I would like to know your exact itinerary for Gen Con 2011. This is from the D6G Sherpa, and this was retweeted
Jeremy,
a few times.
Jeremy, okay.
That's right. So that I may find you two at any moment my heart desires.
Oh, that's
a little creepy.
Yeah.
So what is your Gen Con schedule this year?
Oh, wow. Let's see. My Gen Con schedule this year is relatively light.
As is mine.
I did, speaking of the D6 generation, I signed up for the D6 generation play-by-mob event that they're doing, I think, on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also going to be providing them with some sound equipment. So I'm going to be kind of the technical guy.
I'll probably be there as well. Okay. I imagine. Yeah.
We have our True Dungeon run, the podcaster run, mm-hmm. which is going to be on Saturday.
Right. No overpowered dragon this year. Very excited.
Oh, that's going to be good.
Yeah. Cause I think a few of the people had not a bad taste in their mouth, but they're kind of like, this is it. You know, it's like, you just go this far and get destroyed by this uber dragon.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be good. And it's nice because I always like running with True Dungeon newbies.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's always so fun because you get to see it through their eyes. And the first time you run through, that's kind of a special.
It's like taking your kids to Disney World.
It's exactly right. You know, I can't wait to see Craig Gallant's eyes light up.
Oh.
but we've had to talk him off the ledge a little bit because they're, you know, I showed him tokens and, you know.
We've been having these email conversations, mm-hmm. kind of getting our party ready. And, you know, our podcasting party is going to consist of pretty much all the folks from the D6G, Dan and Sarah Yerrington from Myriad Games, Cody and I, and is Kalen in the?
Yeah.
And Cody's wife, Kalen, and our voice guy, Wayne, mm-hmm. and is that it?
Yes.
Yeah. So you know, we've been doing these email, trying to figure out what class, the character classes we're going to be doing and everything. And they're kind of getting excited about tokens.
Yeah. And it's funny because my in-laws, they've all been playing since the beginning of True Dungeon. They've amassed, I call it the family armory, which is not far off because they can outfit about any class relatively easy. So I'm like, you know, I was being gentle. I'm like, I know a lot of True Dungeon, you hear about the tokens. Like, don't worry, you don't need to spend any extra money on the tokens. We got you covered. I thought it was more of a, you know, me kind of stepping in, being nice,
helping them out. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, you've got like Craig and Wayne. They're like, oh, I want to buy tokens. Where do I buy? I'm like, yeah. Oh no, the infection has begun.
And I finally just told Cody, you know, if they want to buy tokens, yeah, it's okay. Just let them buy tokens. So that's part of the fun.
Yeah. So
I think we're going to have some additional tokens. I think Wayne went in for a few extra tokens for some of the stuff that we're going to have to do. Yeah. So
now you're doing full costume this year, right?
Yeah. I'm supposed to be a dwarf fighter. Yeah. So,
and you're 6 foot.
I'm 6'1". I think we'll have to sort of figure out how to do
just
that.
Walk on your knees.
I thought about that. With like the shoes on the knees there, you know, but I think I would get really old after about room number one. So,
yeah.
That sounds like a good thing.
Well, what else is our schedule? Do you have anything else planned?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I did sign up for a game of Civilization, the board game. I can't remember what day that's on. That may be on Saturday after the True Dungeon run. And then I have a game of Rune Wars that I signed up for Sunday, which, you know, Sunday's kind of a slower day anyway, to kind of winding the con down. So I figured that'd be a good, I always like to play big long games at Gen Con if I can. Mm-hmm. And I always try to get into the games that say some experience required. Nothing wrong with going and learning a new big game at Gen Con, but that tends to go a little slower. So if you know how to play a game, like I know how to play Rune Wars, and you can find a game that says, you know, some experience required, you need to have learned how to play the game, that can be a lot of fun because you just hop in, everybody knows how to play, and you know, you're good to go.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned Twilight Imperium kind of earlier in the rundown. Matt, the guy who runs the meetup, is running a few learn to play games of TI3 at Gen Con.
Oh, God bless him.
Yeah. So if you're interested in playing, look up Matt because he's running, I don't know exactly when the games are, but he's running a few games and he teaches it very well. So I'll give a little plug there.
Awesome. So I think that's all that I signed up for. I tend to like to have Thursday be an all dealer hall day. Mm-hmm. So I get the full experience of all of that.
I think we would both agree Thursday is the best dealer's hall day. It's your lightest attendance day. Sunday gets pretty light, but things may be sold out then.
Right. And Thursday is going to be your day where if you've already heard the scuttlebutt on the internet that, you know, what X game that you're really excited about is releasing, then you're going to want to make your plan. And the dealer hall map is already available online. So mm-hmm. you know where certain booths are. So you should be able to, you know, position yourself in front of the door at 10 o'clock or before 10 o'clock so that you can run in and get that product that you really want. So that's always the fun of Thursday for me, is I usually pick that one game that's the new hotness that I want to get. And I try to go and do that and then just enjoy the dealer hall.
Yeah. And if you're not really worried about getting anything, you know, I'd still say Thursday's a good day to kind of check everything out. But Sunday, a lot of the companies that, especially if they don't want to take a lot back with them, you can usually get some good deals there as things are winding down.
That are from companies from Europe, mm-hmm. not always, but a lot of the companies from Europe, they do not want to spend the money to ship all their product back to France or whatever.
Right.
So you'll see some really interesting discounts on Sunday. I'll go ahead and mention this now, that one thing that's going to be different about Gen Con this year, and hopefully different better, is that for the last, I want to say, 3 years, the Indiana Convention Center has been under construction.
Yes.
And we've done they've done a good job of sort of cordoning things off so that we can still have a fun time at Gen Con.
It was not as bad as I thought.
No, I think they did a real good job of making it a little bit transparent there. But they've done a huge expansion. They built the new football stadium for the Colts, the Lucas Oil Stadium.
Colts.
And they leveled the RCA Dome, which was right attached to the convention center. And now they've used that area to build a new chunk of convention space. And so the halls where the dealer hall have been for the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years are actually not going to be used at all for the dealer hall.
Yeah.
And so the new exhibit hall is going to be in this whole new section that we haven't even really seen yet. online, if you go and just do a search on YouTube for like Gen Con, probably.
Or find Gen Con on Facebook.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it, is to find them on Facebook. They've posted some videos kind of explaining where everything is going to be. So that's new for us, too. We would give you a sneak preview if we could, but we haven't even really seen it ourselves. But all of the dealer hall stuff is going to be in a completely different place.
That's going to be so weird. Because we're just so used to it. I know where everything is in my mind's eye. Yeah, right?
Yeah, so it's going to be a new thing for all of us. And hopefully it's going to be a lot better, because it'll be more space. They're supposed to expand the board gaming area. And especially the open gaming area. In the past, one of the big complaints has been that there's the board gaming hall, which is the 500 ballroom. Mm-hmm. It's a huge room. But that's always where the scheduled board game events are. So you can't just grab your game in the dealer hall and go and sit there. Someone will come and yell at you and kick you out, because there'll be a scheduled event there. And last year, they sort of toyed with the idea of having a board game library, sort of like the boardroom in Origins, a little library that you could check things out, and then an open gaming place for you to play. It was real small.
Yeah.
This year, I think they're going to expand that even more and have a larger area, because there's just more space in the convention center. So
if they can pull that off, that'd be a big, get people from Origins.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I can't tell you how many board gamers I hear that say, well, Origins really is more of the board gaming convention. Isn't Gen Con just about RPGs and collectible card games? No. But I can see how that perception would be there. So if they're able to expand that, I think, we could really turn it into a more of a board gamer con, which would be cool, because there's lots out there. So anyway, if you come to Gen Con in the past, just keep in mind that, the way that things have looked in the past is not necessarily the way that it's going to look going forward. So,
kind of a funny thing is so they've built this brand new hotel in Indianapolis, the JW Marriott.
It's beautiful.
The beautiful crown jewel hotel of the city, getting ready for when we host the Super Bowl, God willing, in 2012.
Yeah.
But it's funny, because if you look at the new Gen Con plans and where the JW Marriott is, it's not a really good hotel to stay at.
No.
Honestly.
It's closest to where the old dealer hall was. And so now, any folks that are staying there, sorry if you've got a reservation there. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be a nice hotel.
Yeah.
You got to walk a really long, it's like quarter of a mile or more a distance to get to where the new dealer hall is.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Real quick, my schedule. I really have nothing planned besides I'm doing a True Dungeon run with my family. I'm doing the podcaster True Dungeon run. I'll probably stop in the D6G thing. Otherwise, I'm going to be really open this year. I'm going to...
get some generics, maybe?
Yeah.
Hop into something?
Just see how that goes, yep.
And I'll go ahead and say that I tried to sign up for other things. We're not going to talk about registration, but
yeah.
or event registration. But I wanted to sign up for Dresden Files RPG game, because I've been reading Dresden books and I want to play the game. All of those were completely full. There was a couple of other events that I tried to get into. Oh, the U2 King Cthulhu RPG, completely full.
Oh, yeah.
So not getting the RPG love that I really wanted to this year, but I might try to hop into one of those games with a generic.
Let me throw in another tip for that real quick before we move on.
Uh-huh.
For indie games, especially like Dresden File, Mouse Guard is usually kind of hard, Burning Wheel, stuff like that is hard to get in a scheduled event. They run a lot of demos in the dealer hall, and while that's not really equivalent to a 4-hour game, it's usually enough to put your toe in the water and see if it's something you like. So don't get too discouraged if you can't find that, because a lot of these, especially like FFG scheduled events, it's like you can usually find a demo in the exhibit hall to try out. So do not lose hope there.
Cool.
All right. Next thing is. Speaking of Origins, my family attends Origins every year. In light of the date change for next year, can you do a comparison between the two cons? Which one is more... we'll take this one time. Which one is more family-friendly?
I think they're equal.
I'd say Gen Con.
You think so?
I think there's more for the youngins to do.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I don't think either of the cons is prohibitive to families or to children.
Family unfriendly.
Neither of them are family.
Razor blades everywhere.
Right.
No, but Gen Con's has really stepped up their kids events and especially in the dealer's hall.
Yeah.
And now they have a babysitting service. I don't know if you saw this.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you can dump off your kid for a few hours and go game. I don't know if I want to do that.
I'm not sure about that, but yeah, they always have a nice kids area in the middle of the dealer hall. Last year, the Lego people had like
a big pyramid,
a big inflatable pyramid. So yeah, my kids had fun with that.
All right. So which one is the better choice for board gaming?
Well, in the past, I would say probably Origins, because of the boardroom and the quality of that experience. For this year, it's kind of up in the air. I'm not really sure.
Big year for Gen Con.
It's a big year to really bring board gaming to the forefront, I think. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes and what the feedback is on board gaming. But I mean, all of the big manufacturers of board games are going to be there. And they're all going to be running events too. So even if the whole open gaming boardrooms kind of feel doesn't pan out, there are going to be a ton of board game events, and usually a lot of those don't fill up.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, look in the event catalog or look online and see if you can get in some games, because you know, I think it's going to be good. I think.
Yeah. They also say that they enjoy some of the tournament events and the Dice Tower dinner. Well, you know, the Dice Tower dinner we can't do anything about, but there's enough tournaments and things like that at Gen Con. I'd say even more, equal to or more than Origin. So
definitely,
you should be good.
And if you're a Dice Tower fanatic, I mean, I think Tom Vassell and his daughter are planning on coming this year. So.
It's funny because Tom came last year and it was just going to be like a one time thing.
Yeah,
I think he got hooked.
You think so?
It's like a drug, man.
Well, now he's back in the States. I guess it's easier for him to do that. So,
all right, here's another one. Have either of you ever considered actually staying in a hotel downtown, despite the fact you're both local and experienced Gen Con like everyone else? Just curious.
I think you're the best person to answer that.
Like everyone else, like the common folk. This year I am. My in-laws have a hotel room, and my wife and I, last year we just kind of came from, because our apartment's just about 10 minutes due south of downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And John lives about 10 minutes due west of downtown, I would say. Mm-hmm. So, but this year we're actually going to stay in the hotel. There are some nice things about it. You know, just being able to drop off things that you purchase, not really having to, because for parking, unless you want to pay an arm and a leg for parking in Indy, you're going to have to park a few blocks out at least, you know, unless you want to pay 20, 30 bucks a day. It's really nice. You know, I've stayed downtown before in years past when I lived in southern Indiana. I don't know. I mean, if I was paying the full cost of the hotel, I might not want to do that, but
yeah. You know, I found that I've never stayed downtown for Gen Con. I just drive in every day, and I build into kind of my budget for Gen Con 20 bucks a day for parking.
Yeah.
And because I could pay a lot less and walk. But it's August in Indianapolis. It's usually in the upper 80s or 90s, and I just would rather have the convenience of, you know, being able to drop stuff off. So I park in the mall parking garage, and, you know, like I said, it's 20 bucks a day. And the only thing that is a little bit lame about it is that I think you have to be out of that parking garage by 1 or 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so well, I know 1 or 2, but, but you know, if I wanted to stay late for a game, you know, I would need to move the car or something. But no, I like being able to drive home and sleep in my own bed. And, you know, since I am, it's kind of a little mini vacation. I usually take about 3 days off for Gen Con, and that's 3 days, weekdays plus the 2 weekend days that I'm not with my family. And so I like being able to, you know, come home, go to bed, wake up in the morning, see the kids, you know, and that way it feels less like I'm away. Abandoning them. Yeah. Although my wife is so wonderfully supportive, and she always, you know, has no problem with me going to Gen Con every year. And usually she'll bring the kids down on Sunday. So, it's too expensive for me. It's not worth it to me, even though it would be a convenient experience.
Yeah, I think it would just be too much. But
yeah,
sometime I might try it. Let's see what else we got. Okay, we've got one here.
We got a lot. Wow.
Yeah, we got nice feedback from you guys. This is my second Gen Con and first time showing up on Wednesday. How do the KFG, that's the Kentucky Fried Gamers, it's a gaming group located in Kentucky of all places. How do those events work, and where, how do I sign up? What do I do for some Wednesday gaming? So if you go on the Gen Con website and go to the community forums, that's where they kind of handle all of their game organization. Conversely, you can just kind of go to their main, where they hold the events, which is Scotty's Brew House and the Ram downtown. Go there. They will be happy to hook you up with some gaming action. There's always a space to fill. But if you want to get in on some scheduled stuff, go to the Gen Con forums off of the Gen Con website and search for the Kentucky Fried Gamers, and they will hook you up.
Yeah, but that's if you're going to be downtown and you want to do gaming on Wednesday, that's probably the, one of the best things you can do is mm-hmm. Go there. And, you know, Scotty's and the Ram are both restaurants that really doll it up for Gen Con. They always have lots of decorations and stuff. I still have my Scotty's Brewhouse die that I got mm-hmm. last year. So, yeah, there's always lots of good events there. So.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend just any time during the con. Head over to Scotty's Brewhouse. They've kind of taken up the mantle as probably the coolest place to eat during Gen Con. You know, go off peak hours, otherwise you're going to wait a while. But they have special menus. They're running geeky movies the whole time on all the TVs instead of sports. They really do it up. And Dave Hornack, one of the managers there, is just a great guy and a gamer at heart. So check out Scotty's Brewhouse.
Truly.
Any final tips?
All right,
you would have.
Let's just talk about just some real quick tips mm-hmm. about top things for Gen Con. I would say, you definitely want to pace yourself. You know,
yep.
Don't overschedule. I know we've said this many times before. Do not commit yourself to too much stuff. You know, because you will burn yourself out, and you will find that by Friday night or by Saturday morning, you've got a stomach ache or something or a headache, and you end up spending half of a day in your hotel room recovering because you just overdid it. So, it's important to get sleep. It's important to get your rest, even though, you're going to have that feeling of I'm laying down to go to sleep, but there's still stuff going on, but mm-hmm. give yourself that rest and just pace yourself. Having said that, I would say Gen Con is the perfect time for you to become a better, well-rounded gamer.
Step out of your comfort zone.
We at Game On with Cody and John are firm believers in the well-rounded gamer and in broadening your horizons. So try something that you've never tried before. That would be my challenge to every listener that's coming to Gen Con. Do something this year that you've never done before, that you wouldn't have thought of doing. Paint a miniature. Go to a seminar on writing. Go and play a board game you've never played before.
Jump in on a true dungeon run.
Try a collectible card game that you've never tried. There's lots of sealed deck and new kind of tournaments that are out there that just give it a shot. So there's so much to experience, and this is a great time to do it. So.
Hear, well said. I was going to echo the get sleep because I've tried the thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to go to bed at 3 and I've got an 8 a.m. event, but it's Gen Con. I'm going to stay up late and get up early. It just makes it unfun after a while. So like John said, just get your sleep. Wear comfortable shoes. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer, but
shoes are extremely important. Yeah. I'm someone that in the summertime, I tend to wear Teva sandals. Mm-hmm. I swear by those, by the way. Teva is not a sponsor of Game On with Cody and John, but you need to buy some because they're awesome. But I would never consider wearing sandals to Gen Con. I always personally wear nicely supported tennis shoes because yep. you're just going to be on your feet for a long time and it's not worth it to have hurting feet. I seem to remember one year we were doing something. You were dressed in your bard costume uh-huh. and you had some kind of really cool looking shoes on.
Yeah.
But I think I remember that after like an hour or two, you're like, oh, this was a bad idea.
It was not great. Yeah.
Yeah. So comfortable shoes are important.
Yep. All right. I would say for purchases, unless you have something that's coming out on Thursday that you know beyond a shadow of a doubt you're going to get, I would say make no purchases on your first pass. And we would both say Thursday is your best dealer hall day, like we mentioned.
Yes.
Something I plan to do is when I'm doing that first sweep, just going up and down the things, just writing down everything that looks like, oh, I might buy that.
Use your phone. Yeah, write it in your phone.
Do something. But then by the end of that first pass, you can see everything you've written down. You can go explore them a little more. You know, what games do you actually want to sit down and demo? Things like that. And I think you can either save money or make better purchases doing yes. that. Because I've made impulse buys before. I know John's made impulse buys before.
Preach it, Brother Cody.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a quick and dirty way. And Thursday, it's not as crowded as the other day, so you can take your time more with it.
Because you will be tempted, gamers.
You will be tempted.
You'll be seeing all the shinies and all the limited edition, and you can only get it here, and we've only got 5 copies left.
Yep.
And you will, the siren song will come, mm-hmm. and you got to be ready.
How was Cadwell and City of Thieves? Pretty good.
No, you don't need to make fun of me over that. I completely admit I bought
Burning Wheel last year. That's never going to get played.
Yep. And this year, my main goal in Gen Con is to have it be an impulse buy free year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's never happened. Last year, yeah, Cadwallon City of Thieves was my only just absolutely
you did very well last year.
Crazy impulse purchase. Mm-hmm. But that's really good advice. We've said this on the show before that we want to make purchases count more, you know. And what I found at Origins this year, I didn't even really mention, is that there were several games there that I passed up. Like, I didn't get the Seven Wonders expansion, even though I could have. Because, I mean, it'll come out eventually, you know. Yeah. What do you really need to buy it at Gen Con, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, just ask yourself that question. Unless you got millions of dollars. In that case, buy whatever you want. But, yeah. But if you're on a budget and you only have a few things you want to get, just make sure that you're making a good decision there. Yeah. And, you know, the dealer hall's open for 4 days, so you got plenty of time.
And stop by some of the smaller press companies or the new companies, because there's a lot of hidden gems out there.
Yeah.
So definitely for the whole con, even, I would say, you know, just stop and smell the roses. It's kind of a warm, fuzzy thing that I always think. You know, you may think it's kind of lame, but my favorite thing about Gen Con is that you have these tens of thousands of people that all share a common passion that have kind of all come together. And it's just this kind of really cool thing for me. So, you know, go to the art show, just go around different areas, you know, God forbid, go to the anime area, if only to walk through it and just kind of, you know, okay, yeah, this is what this looks like. You know, just take in the whole experience, because we really think there's nothing like Gen Con, and that I would say we both think it's the best con out there.
Hear, hear.
So, if you have any other questions, please don't hesitate to send us an email.
At the Game On Inbox, it's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Or give us a call at the Game On Hotline.
That's 4138-GAME-ON. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook, like Wayne says on the outro. We're happy to answer any questions leading up to the big shoe.
And you can also find us at Gen Con. So, you know, look for us. We're going to have our blue Game On shirts on. And, you know, come and ask us for a die. Well, we have some cool Game On dice that we'll absolutely give out. I don't think we have any sort of like an event planned, a Game On event, you know, for this year, but we'll definitely be around.
And we will probably maybe stop in it. We'll probably maybe. the podcaster meet and greet that they usually have.
Oh, yeah, they're doing that. I don't even know if they're doing that. But if they do, we'll probably stop we'll make an appearance. So. Yeah. But you can find us around the dealer hall, find us in the board gaming room and all that kind of stuff. And we'd love to talk to you. So everybody have a great Gen Con. And one more resource we want to tell you guys about that's actually run by a friend of the podcast, Randy Porter. Randy is a guy who we call him the Keeper. He's the Keeper of Ancient Gen Con Lore. And this is a title that's been given to him by many folks. And he's an Indianapolis resident who has been a gamer for many, many years and has gone to Gen Con for, oh gosh, has he been to all of them?
Maybe. I mean, he's been to quite a few.
It's going back to a long ways, back to, you know, back to the Gary Gygax days early on. And so he has put together this really great website and list of resources about Gen Con. It goes into even more detail than the stuff that we talked about here. And so we invite you to go to his website. We're going to put the link into the show notes there. And we really do appreciate having Randy around here to really sort of be an ambassador for Gen Con. So thanks, Randy.
The King of Tokyo. They know my name everywhere I go.
All right, before we get into our buy, try, or deny on King of Tokyo, we want to give our due penance to Father Dan and the team at Myriad Games. Myriad Games sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Even if you don't have any,
Tokyo,
even in Tokyo, or if you were the monarch, reigning monarch of Tokyo,
that's right.
Myriad Games, you know, King of Tokyo is a great example, because this one that, I mean, it has just come out,
yeah,
and he had copies ready and waiting to send to us. Great guy, and
matter of fact, I felt a little bit, I was a little bit sad, and I felt a little guilty because I picked up King of Tokyo at Origins. Like, there was only one booth selling it, and it wasn't even their main game. Like, it wasn't even Aiello's booth; it was some other person. They had like five or six copies, and so I picked it up there, and then I had to email Dan and say, "You can take it off my reservation list, buddy."
And he had it ready for you.
He did.
This is penance, then.
Sorry, Dan.
But if check out MyriadGames.com, their MVP memberships. It's the best way to spend your gaming dollar, and we would both say the best service in the biz. So Definitely. Check out MyriadGames.com.
Woo!
All right, so we are now going to get into our buy, try, deny on King of Tokyo. Like we said, it is published by this Aiello company. They did Biblios as well, and that was good. So we'll see if this is good. And designed by Richard Garfield, Mr. Magic. Now, I wonder, I tried to look this up. I could not find it. How much he gets from Magic, you know?
I don't know.
You know, because Magic is just, deals are just printing money, you know. I wonder if it's one of those things where, like, maybe he sold it just for a lump sum and, you know, doesn't get residuals or anything.
I hope not.
Come on, Rich, you know. So, King of Tokyo, Richard Garfield, and here to give you his patented rules rundown is John.
All right, so yeah, King of Tokyo, another game by this Aiello company, which until Cody mentioned Biblios last episode, I'd never even heard of them before.
No, neither, huh?
And so I think we had mentioned in that review that Biblios had really cool components to it. This game also has really nice components as well. So King of Tokyo is for 2 to 6 players, ages 8 and up. It plays in about 30 minutes. And in this game, each player is going to take on the role of a giant movie monster of some sort, right?
A giant ape or giant, an alien or a big lizard.
That's right, big lizard. Mecha dragon, or you can be like the cyber bunny, I think is another one.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And you're going to pick one of these, and the goal is that you're trying to take control of Tokyo. And, you know, by doing that, you get a lot of victory points. So
conquest, destruction points.
I was going to say, don't be scared by the fact that it's a victory point game, because this is not a Euro game by any stretch of the imagination. What it actually is a dice rolling game that has a little bit of a push your luck element, a little bit of a Yahtzee element. Don't be scared by that. Talked about that in a second. And a lot of great theme. So here's kind of how it works. What you're going to get with the game is these little stand-up tokens for your monsters. All of the monsters are the same as far as they don't have any special abilities or anything. So you're just going to pick the monster that you like just based upon the artwork. And the artwork is this great cartoony, you know, great fun monster movie sort of art. And so you're going to get your little stand-up token for the monster. And they're big, too. They're probably 3 by 4 inches or something. They're big.
Big old things.
And then you're going to get a scoring token, I guess. It's this thing. It's very similar to like the threat dial in Fantasy Flight's Lord of the Rings card game. It's got two dials that are attached to it, and one dial is for victory points, and the other dial is for health. And so you're going to start off with 10 health and 0 victory points. You're going to put the board in the middle of the table. The board is one of my favorite boards of all time. And here's why. It's a board that has 2 spaces on it. And if you're playing in a game with less than 5 players, it's a board with 1 space on it. And that space is Tokyo. The second space is Tokyo Bay if you're playing with 5 or 6 players. Mm. So in this game, your character is either in Tokyo or not in Tokyo. That's pretty much it. Yep. So I love the fact that when they sat down to design the game, they said, we need a board with 1 space on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's got this great artwork of the, you know, fun Tokyo on fire and, you know, destruction and all that kind of stuff. And so and then the other main component that this game comes with is large, chunky dice. And so there are 6 dice. The game actually comes with 8, but you're only going to use 6 of them to start off with. And these dice they're black, and they have these great neon green symbols on them. So the dice have on their faces, you have a 1, a 2, a 3. You've got a heart, a little lightning bolt, and then you've got a monster claw kind of a thing, right? And so what you're going to do on your turn is you're going to roll all 6 of your dice, and you're going to do it kind of Yahtzee style. You'll do 3 rolls of the dice, and you can re-roll dice, and you can things that you've set aside, you can re-roll them, basically a total of 3 rolls in any way that you want, and then you get your final set of dice there. And here's how it's going to work as far as how you resolve the dice, is that the numbers are going to be worth victory points. And you only get victory points if you get at least 3 of 1 number. So if you get 3 ones, that is worth 1 victory point for that 3 ones. And then if you have an additional 1, that's worth an additional victory point. And then if you get another 1, that's worth an additional victory point. So 5 ones is equal to 3 victory points.
Right.
Got that?
I got it.
Okay. So same thing. If you had 3 twos, that's worth 2 victory points. An additional 2 is worth 1, and an additional 2 is worth 1. So if you had 5 twos, then that's going to be worth 4 victory points. Yeah, that's kind of how it works.
Maybe we got it.
Okay, all right. So that's how victory points work. So if you roll that, then you're going to go ahead and dial up those victory points for you. If you roll hearts, then any hearts that you roll will allow you to heal your character, provided that you are not in Tokyo. And we'll talk about that getting into Tokyo in a second and what that means. If you roll lightning bolts, then you're going to take some of these little energy cubes. I guess I kind of missed 2 main components in the game, sorry. One is that you have this pile of little plastic green cubes, which count for energy. And then you have a deck of cards, and you're going to turn up 3 face-up cards that are going to sit in front of right next to the board.
All unique cards, like 66 unique cards.
Yeah, with really fun artwork on them and everything. And it's a very, very themey sort of a game. Think monster movies. Mm-hmm. So if you get lightning bolts, then you're going to take some of those energy cubes. And it's the energy that you're going to be able to use to buy these cards that give you special abilities. So you take your little energy cubes there. And then the last thing that you could possibly have is monster claws. Now, at the very beginning of the game, no one starts out in Tokyo. And so whoever rolls first and rolls monster claws and ends up with some monster claws will take their token and put it into Tokyo. And that's just something that happens at the very beginning of the game just to get someone into Tokyo. Now, on later rounds, here's what the monster claws are going to do. If you are not in Tokyo, then the number of monster claws is going to be the attack value to attack the monster that is in Tokyo. So if you roll three monster claws, you're going to deal three damage to the player that is in Tokyo.
Or players in Tokyo.
Right. In a 5-6 player game, you could have up to two players in Tokyo. It would deal damage to each one of those. But for the purpose of this discussion, I'll kind of keep it to if there's like four or less players. So you'd have one guy in Tokyo. And so you'll deal that damage. At that point, then the other player has to take the damage and reduce their life total. And then they have a decision to make. They can either stay in Tokyo and say, I'm staying to fight. Or you can, or they'll choose to abandon and get out of Tokyo, in which case you can get into Tokyo. Why do you want to get into Tokyo? I'm glad you asked. When you get into Tokyo, then you're going to get one victory point for entering Tokyo. And then if you can stay in Tokyo for an entire round and it gets back around to the beginning of your next turn, then you get two victory points for every turn that you're staying in Tokyo. But it's going to be tough because if you're not in Tokyo, then when you roll those monster claws, you're always going to be attacking the monster that is in Tokyo. Now, if you happen to be in Tokyo and then you roll monster claws, what you're going to do is you're going to deal that damage to every other player that is not in Tokyo. Every other player. So that's kind of a cool thing about being in Tokyo. Another downside to being in Tokyo is that you cannot heal if you're in Tokyo. So, you know, you start taking damage. You have no choice but to leave Tokyo to be able to heal yourself up. So that is the basics of how that works. After you've resolved your dice, then if you want to spend any of those energy cubes to buy cards, then you can. The cards are going to have one of two different kinds of effects. You'll either have a discard effect, in which case you'll buy the card, immediately discard it, and do whatever it says. It might give you victory points, might allow you to heal, might do any number of things. Or it's going to say keep, in which case you'll keep the card in front of you and it'll have some kind of standing effect. Like, you know, every time you deal damage to someone in Tokyo, you deal +1 damage or something like that. And all of the abilities on the cards, they're all very themey and they have, you know, funny things. Like you can have like a spiked tail or, mm-hmm. you know, you can have I think one of them is like diligent local newscast or something like that. Yeah. It's reporting the whole thing. So you'll basically resolve your turn, then pass the dice to the left. I mentioned you get two additional dice in the game. There's some cards that allow you to roll an extra die, and so that's what those will be for. But pretty much that is the whole game, and so you'll just pass things around. Monsters will be going in and out of Tokyo, and will be dealing damage. And the game ends when one player reaches 20 victory points, or if you're the last monster standing. So there is player elimination in this game. But fear not, it's a pretty short game, so yeah. If you get eliminated, you're only going to have to sit there for probably 10 or 15 minutes, and it's kind of fun to watch how everything plays out. So that's the whole deal. That's the whole game of King of Tokyo. And as we always do on Buy, Try, or Deny, we like to give you our buy points, our try points, and our deny points for these games to give you an idea as to whether you want to buy this one or not or check it out. So Cody, you played King of Tokyo.
We
played it a couple of times with various people. Give me your buy points. What did you think overall? Well, give me your buy points for King of Tokyo.
First of all, it's just a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer, but it's a very tongue-in-cheek game. It's a lot of fun, but it mixes. I'm a big fan of games that mix a lot of different mechanics, and this, you know, has a nice press your luck mechanic with some. With some other things kind of mixed in there, but it's just a lot of fun, and it's something, it's not a genre you see used a lot. Like, you saw it for, like, Monsterpocalypse, but that's just a completely different kind of game.
Yeah.
So this was an interesting take on it, and like I said, it's good to see Richard Garfield back in the arena there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, and for being a Richard Garfield game, you know, don't be scared off by that. I know he did Robo Rally, but don't be scared off by any complexity issues. You know, this is not a Magic the Gathering. This is a, I think it lists ages eight and up, and yeah, I think that's about right. I think my 8-year-old wouldn't have any problem.
Great components as well, like you mentioned earlier.
Great components, yeah. I mean, any try points or anything that are, might not be so great?
I would say the retail price on it is a touch high. I think it retails for $39 or $40.
I paid $39 for it at the con, so I would imagine it would be at least that.
Yeah. That seems a touch high. I mean, I don't want that to be a deny point for things, but you know, it's a good, dare I say, filler game.
Don't say that.
But $40 seems a bit much for it. I mean, it's a great game, a lot of fun, but I would say it's more in the $30 range for me.
Yeah, for me, my rationale for buying it for the price is the fact that this kind of game will get a lot of play for me. I mean, I'll be able to play this at work. I think I'm going to try to bring it out to some friends of mine at work. Because it plays in, even with six players, it plays in half an hour, you know, and you can even play multiple games of it, you know, in a short period of time. So it's going to get to the table a lot. It's going to be very accessible. I think it's very accessible for non-gamers. You know, if you know the Yahtzee rolling mechanic and you can count, and, you know, it's not going to be that difficult to understand the rules of this one. So, so for me, that's going to be worth it because it's going to get to the table an awful lot. This is going to become a go-to game for me, for mixes of gamers and non-gamers. Any deny points?
No deny points. It's a lot of fun. I think definitely check it out if you get the chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is one that it should be releasing pretty soon. Well, I know it was at Origin, so I'm not sure if it's in wide release yet, but should be, you know, in sort of the July time frame. This one's going to be at your local stores, and so we would definitely encourage you to check it out. It's a great one from Aiello Games, King of Tokyo.
All right, well, thanks again for listening to another monstrous episode.
An unconventional episode.
Oh, very nice. Conventions. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Of Game On with Cody and John, as always, we appreciate you listening. And John's got some things to mention as we walk out the door here.
That's right. Well, we always invite you to interact with us because we love that, either through the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Or the Game On Hotline.
4138-GAME-ON.
Yep. Or you can check out our guild on BoardGameGeek. This is another great way not just to interact with us, but with other listeners of the show. There's a forum post. You know, start up a thread, ask a question, you know, and we get some good discussion going on there. That's a lot of great listeners to the show that are part of the guild. If you haven't joined our guild, we'd invite you to definitely go and find that on BoardGameGeek. Or you can just click the link on gameonpodcast.com, take you straight there, and you can join the fun that's out there. One of the great ways you can support the show is by leaving us reviews on iTunes. That's always good to kind of jump us up in the rankings there, so we appreciate your feedback there. Also, we have a donation button on the website donations. Yep. One of the things that we kind of put an appeal out the last couple episodes is that we're really interested in participating in the Extra Life charity gaming event that's going to be at Myriad Games in Salem and Manchester, New Hampshire, coming up in October. And so we were asking you guys for help just to help cover some of the airline expenses to get us there. And we've had some real great response. We already had some donations together. I think we're, you know, we're probably approaching sort of the halfway mark of what we need. And so we would really appreciate any other donations you guys could throw at us for that. Another great way you can support us is by purchasing some Game On dice. We just got some brand new dice made with the GO Game On logo on the 6. Not on the 1, no, but on the 6.
We want you to praise our name, not curse it.
Exactly.
Unless you're playing some war game, then, well, sorry.
Yeah, then don't play with our dice then. You can go to gameshop.gamesalute.com and just click on the stuff for Game On with Cody and John, and you'll see the dice there, and you can pick up some dice.
There's also a link to it on the website.
Oh, right. Cody's the website guy, so he knows these things more than I do. But you can check those out and you can get some great Game On dice to enhance your gaming experience. So join us in 2 weeks where we're going to be talking about a lot of other great stuff. Who knows what it'll be.
Indeed.
It's going to be a big surprise.
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery. But we're gearing up for Gen Con. We hope you guys are getting ready for convention season. Even if you're not, I hope that you're doing some great gaming wherever you are. Hey, we love making this podcast for you. And until next time,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at GameOnPodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.
Gen Con.